Welcome everybody to East End Beach Village Board Meeting, dated Monday, September 19th, 2022. Kathy, you take the role.
Trustee Mahoney will not be here. Trustee Coonsey?
Present.
Trustee Britton?
Here.
Trustee Saviano?
Here.
Trustee Triver will not be here. Trustee Sauter?
Here.
And President Lineham?
Here.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Alright, that will take us to our public comment section. We're going to hear, and would anybody in the audience like to address the board on either an agenda or non-agenda item?
Yes.
Do. The floor is yours.
Very sloppily filled out.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone. I'm here to express my concern.
Just say your name.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
I'm Sue Marnie, and I'm a resident of East Dundee, but I am part of maybe what we should be a customer. So I'm here to express my concern about the lack of progress in the sale of the 611 East Main Street building to Dundee Township Foundation. And I'm requesting that the village proceed with a contract for the foundation's purchase of the rooms by the end of the week. The foundation offered the highest bid for the village's rooms several months ago. Our president immediately contacted the village staff to move forward with the contract in hand. First, we were told the village administrator was on vacation and the attorney was unavailable. And now, apparently, the board has discussed this further, and we are being asked to renegotiate the contract and buy fewer rooms. And my plea to all of you tonight is, we made our bid in good faith, and we relied on the village's stated goal to divest itself completely from this property. We found investors, which was no mean feat for a foundation as small as we are, to provide for space for our rooms and to renovate the rest of them. Now, after weeks of delay, the village is pressuring us to negotiate a different arrangement. We're asking that you honor your original statements and sell us all of the village rooms in the building. The foundation is not opposed at all to negotiating for either a lease or sale of some rooms in the future. However, conducting these negotiations with the village so clearly weighing in on behalf of the bidders puts us and our investors at a disadvantage. We respectfully ask that you direct your staff to sign a sales contract with the foundation, or actually that you direct your staff to provide a contract for the president to sign a contract with the foundation for $110,000. That was our bid price by 3 o'clock this Friday. I think that all of you can agree that it is in the best interest of the taxpayers of this village and probably taxpayers at large that you get this off your hands and that we can start renovating it and get this, at least maybe some of it back in the tax rolls. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Is there anybody else who'd like to address the board? Agenda item, non-agenda item? Just a second. All right. Seeing none, then we'll just move on. We have no consent agenda, so we'll just move right into the meat of the meeting here, and we'll go to item A, if I could have a motion.
I will move to approve an ordinance amending section 157.003, rules and definitions to add permanent cosmetics, micro landings.
Blading.
Microblading.
Micropigmentation.
Micropigmentation and similar care services as a definition in amending section 157.050F1 to add permanent cosmetics, microblading, and micropigmentation and similar care services as a permitted use and tattooing as a special use. B1, B2, and B3 districts.
Second.
Any discussion on this one? I have a question. Did it limit tattooing to cosmetic tattooing, or was this going to just be any tattoo, parlor tattooing?
So that I think what you mean by cosmetic tattooing is microblading.
That's what we're...
I think I know what he's asking.
Okay,
so,
go ahead.
Okay, we're doing three things by this action. The first is that we're creating a definition for these care services, which are microblading, micropigmentation, common care services that are provided not for, you know, what would be considered a elective use if you were getting a regular tattoo. So we've created this definition, so now we know what these services are. Now we're saying in these districts, B1, B2, and B3, it's going to be a permanent use. So if you lease a space and you want to provide these services to the public, you will now be able to do that without having to come before the board and seek a special use permit. Tattooing has also been added as a special use, where if you would like to lease a space in one of these districts and you would like to open a tattoo studio for the general public, you have to come before the board and seek a special use permit.
Are there any other questions? I mean, was this changed a lot from when this was first presented to us?
I believe that tattooing came before the board several years ago.
Well, no, I remember seeing this draft of the this was a change on the previous agenda.
It's been before planning and zoning a few months ago, but it has not yet come before the board. It may have been that we were asking.
Yeah, I think this is one of the last ones where the board had to say it was okay for you to go and take it to planning and zoning,
yes,
so that it could come back to the board.
Right.
Yes.
That's why we've seen these words.
Yes. That's why it seems like it's, yeah.
You changed that procedure as well.
Correct. But after this one.
That over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the applicants are here this evening. If you had any questions.
The applicants, are they applying to change the ordinance, or are they applying for a license?
Well, if this is approved, they will not need to seek a license because it will be allowed to use.
Well, I guess my question is, there's three services provided here, which I would imagine are, I don't want to say typical for a spa type service, but maybe somewhat. Are there other things we should have on here that may not pertain to this particular vendor, but might also pertain to services? Or do we just wait for somebody to ask us and change the ordinance in the future?
Well, I think that's why we added the similar care services.
Yeah, really.
Really,
what you're doing is you're separating out. What was happening before is that people would say, well, the services of microblading, which is a cosmetic sort of procedure, are a form of tattooing, and so they were covered by those regulations, which are usually somewhat more restrictive. And so here you're culling those out, and you're saying that if you fall within these items or similar, as Erica pointed out, they're now a permitted use, because they're provided very commonly by cosmeticians and salons like that.
So could we get an explanation or example of what microblading is?
It's false tattoo. It's like tattooed eyebrows.
So
I'm the owner of Willow and Birch.
Sure.
Thank you for having us, and thank you for considering my company to be a part of the village. To clear up any confusion, I do paramedical micropigmentation, which is scar camouflaging work for burn survivors and 3D areola restoration work for breast cancer survivors. Within that, then you can also create missing toenails and belly buttons. So it's not like your traditional decorative tattooing. And that's kind of going in part with our wellness boutique directed towards like cancer care and just overall wellness. Do you have any other specific questions that I can help clear up at all?
Mm-hmm. Would similar care services include like a henna ink type procedure?
No henna, but it is just non-traditional in the sense that it's not like ink tattooing that you see decorative tattooing wise. It's all like skin tone pigments and things like that.
An overall tan.
Almost. It's a lot of pain.
can afford it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Trustee Coonsey?
Yes.
Trustee Britton?
Yes.
Trustee Saviano?
Yes.
And Trustee Sauter?
Yes. I've been notified that item B will be pulled. We're going to move right on to item C if we could have a motion.
Okay. I would move to approve a resolution approving and entering into a license agreement, Dirt Road Community Charging.
Seconds.
Any questions or discussion on this one?
Would you have a short presentation if you guys have time?
Yes, absolutely.
Hi, I'm Bethany. I'm with Carbon Solutions Group. I work in project sales and origination for Illinois and Oregon. So thank you for having me. I've been in talks with Franco, going back and forth with license agreements the last couple months. So. Appreciate you guys taking the time tonight to have me here. So I'll try to do this presentation. I kind of sent it in PDF form, so work with me here. So Carbon Solutions Group is an Illinois-based company since 2006. We are made up of three core principal groups that focus on sustainability and the carbon markets. Those core groups are made up of our ESG services, our SREC aggregation, which we do have 15,000 customers here in Illinois alone, and then our Dirt Road EV charging platform that we actually started out in San Diego in 2017. So our Dirt Road community platform brings public, fleet, workplace, and residential charging into a common platform to provide a low-cost public charging amenity and enable EV adoption within the community as a whole. When charging increases anywhere in the community, the cost of charging drops for everyone. So what are the benefits to the Village of East Dundee? We are going to eliminate all costs and risks for you as the host. We're going to cover all electricity costs throughout the course of the term. We eliminate all operating expenses, which include network fees, maintenance, and upgrades. It's also going to attract EV drivers in your community, and then also serve as a long-term revenue stream for the Village. So our deal structure, I'm just going to go over it real briefly. I'm not going to like go into all the meat of the actual deal, but we're proposing one EV charging station at Meyer Street, either at the Barrington entrance or the railroad entrance, all depending on where the utilities are actually ran. And then if we could actually install either entrance, that's up to you guys to vote where we place them. It really doesn't matter to us. And the other one, we propose another 120 kilowatt station at the Main Street parking lot, which is right by the Dairy Queen. We will apply for VW and CEJA funding through the state of Illinois. If this grant funding is not awarded, we will then propose a partnership model to the Village. This is something that we did recently come up with and we've been discussing internally, but the way the partnership model would work is we would still put up all the capital to the Village. We would still cover all development, installation, and maintenance fees throughout the course of the term. The only thing is the Village would need to meet a 5% utilization threshold if there weren't enough, if there wasn't enough utilization happening. Hopefully I explained that right. Okay, so cost savings for the Village, you'd be looking at saving almost 260 grand out of your pocket for us being the owner and operator of these stations. As far as pro forma revenue, based off a 20% utilization threshold, you'd be looking at around 60K in revenue toward to the Village over a 20-year course. Just a little bit about the scope of work. So as you can see here, you are the host, and then we're in the middle taking care of everything. So we're gonna take care of all the permitting, work directly with the utility company, do all the design with our in-house team of engineers. We have our Dirt Road EV Charging Platform app, which is our software, hardware, etc. I think you get the drift on that. So once again, proposed locations, we already went over this. And then just to take a look at the equipment that we would install. So we would be installing an AB Terra 120 kilowatt fast charging station. They are looking to revamp this model, but as of now, this is what it would look like.
It would provide a driver with 350 miles worth of range in a 20 to 35 minute period. So this is our Dirt Road app. It is still in beta form. It should be launched by the end of the year. But basically what this provides to a driver is they can actually reserve a spot within the app. They can either pay as you go, or they can actually load money onto the app and go that way. Or we also offer subscription services as well. But we also are equipped with an in-house OCPP server. Drivers will be able to see our network and any other network in the area. This is a new requirement for the National Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Bill passed by President Biden this year. So the village subscriptions, you guys can actually offer these to your employees, so the police department within Village Hall. It usually offers anywhere from 5 to 7 cents lesser than the actual, if for someone were to pay at the actual station. So a little bit cheaper for the kilowatt per hour. And as far as the project timeline, probably looking at around 18 months. Just to work with utility design, permitting, construction, and then with supply chain issues as well. Things have been getting a little better, but I would say at least a solid year, but I like to be a little more modest with my guess. So I'd say 18 months is a good guess, but that is it. I appreciate your time, and thank you.
So I do have one quick thing. Meyer is one way, so it's not two entrances, right? It's one way off of Barrington. I think what we have in the packet is either on Meyer or, oh, it's on Meyer either at Railroad or at Barrington. I'm wondering if looking at River Street on the other side of Railroad is a possibility, just because there's less. That first block between Barrington and Railroad is very heavily parked. You know, we've got Cobbs and Black and Gray and Mockingbird and Diamond Jones and the Animal Club. It's like everything except Banditos and a few other places are right in that square block. So do we want to consider scooching it a little bit, if it's feasible, just as another placement idea? I love the idea of this. I'm just concerned about placement.
On top of that, are we agreeing right now to the locations of these, or are we just agreeing to the principle of moving forward with this idea?
So we're agreeing to two locations, one being in the parking lot on Main, and one being some location in the vicinity of what was described based on where the existing power is from. So, you know, it becomes prohibitively expensive if we have to install a bunch of infrastructure to not get our 13 charging system. So we sort of left it open that we would explore where the power is coming in at and where the easiest place to tap into would be, and then we would go from there to find the most logical place to put the charging station. We can check and see if there's any power infrastructure on that second block of River Street.
Or even on Railroad, like around, like, just right by Meyer, there's parking just around the corner, like on the side of Animal Club. There's street parking there. So I feel like I'm, yes, I want to, yes, the one on the Main Street parking lot is good, but that other one is sort of more, I'd like to know what makes sense as far as, I'd like to hear more details about infrastructure, reasons of where exactly it should go before I say yes to a specific spot.
Gotcha.
If that makes sense.
There are other options, DC. Or at the river, I'm sorry, at Jackson Walker. It's always a possibility, too, because that may come into the village as well. So we've got some control over that. That's a possibility. And then that. But that's down the road. One of the things that's got me a little bit concerned is the likelihood that you're going to get that grant, and then if you don't, it becomes a partnership with the village.
It doesn't have to be. I mean, yes, we're proposing that, but if you guys didn't want to move forward with the partnership, it doesn't lock you into the partnership.
I'm just wondering, you know, what's the likelihood that you can, I mean, if we would want these things, I mean, obviously there's a number of electric vehicles, whatever, it's
make that a given, bringing them in under the assumption that you're going to be getting a grant to do so, only to get hit later on, is a concern for me. So I would want to know exactly what we're dealing with there, and then what those costs would be. The other question would be the maintenance, any cost due to vandalism, or the removal, if it were not your choice to do so. If it was on the village and we just wanted to remove them or relocate them or whatever, who picks up that cost? So I would want to see explanation of the costs on the whole thing.
As well as, I guess, electric vehicle technology is fairly new. As time goes on, there's no doubt going to be upgrades to systems. We might need a new machine. We have to find a new machine.
No, we would take care of any maintenance or upgrades throughout the course of the term.
So the contract is a 10-year term, and that seems like a long time, but it's actually not in the scope of all of this. Practical realities. Somebody needs to install some. We need to get some. If we were to do this on our own, it wouldn't be impractical. We don't have the staff or the technical resources to maintain it or to manage it. So we need to partner with a company. This company has a very good reputation, and if the contract has a provision where if we don't receive these in 2 years, then the contract we can sever the contract. So it provides an adequate safety, I guess, for the village, and it doesn't preclude us from adding additional stations if any other stations do. So from that point, I think there's, we've tried to limit any risk to the village, we tried to provide public service. These things are in much of demand, and we do not have any in the village right now. I just said they're very much in demand.
I don't know. But are all of the nozzles or inputs, are they all the same, or are there proprietary ones for certain makes of cars, or how does that work?
So these are universal. The only thing they won't charge is a Tesla. Tesla has their own separate charger. You can call them. They might come and install a station for you, but the list is a million miles long. So Tesla drivers can actually purchase a universal charger to charge their car using that. But to be very honest, most Tesla drivers have chargers at their home. Mm-hmm. Or they're not usually going to have public charging anyways.
So, but this is going to be the most common?
Yes, it's universal, yes. So like Nissan Leafs, any of the new Chevys, like the Equinox is coming out, the Hummer, it's all universal.
It sounds to me like, since we're still trying to figure out where the utilities are, that if we vote today, are we really locking in a place, or it's still tentative because of the utilities?
Well, I would say that we would work with this company to do all that due diligence and then come back and forth with our final location suggestion, and then at that point we can move forward.
And I will say, we do cover all, if we have to run utilities, we cover that as well with our capital. So it wouldn't be out of the village's pocket.
Okay.
And that pertains to the partnership model as well. We still cover all the capital. It's just that 5% utilization threshold that would have to be met.
Would you be able to provide us, too, a list of the other municipalities you're currently working with?
So as of right now, we don't have one signed in Illinois. This would actually be the first. But we are in the city of Palm Springs, Boulder, Colorado, city of Santa Barbara, very, very well-known municipalities out in California. We just signed a deal with Fort Worth. We were awarded their RFP. And then Montgomery County out in Maryland, which is going to be like 300 stations.
Do you have, I guess, for our town, how did you decide? Three is a good amount. Ideally, there's always one available, but not one just sitting empty. Details on why it seems like three is a good number. I don't have a good gauge as to how many per percentage of electric cars are needing this?
Sure, exactly. We do look at a map to see where EV drivers are. I would say East Dundee, it is a little lower than, let's say, Winnetka, you know, where people drive a lot of EVs. But our proposal also includes, if the demand rises, we will install additional stations as well. But two is a good number to start.
Yeah, that does seem like it'd be good for the bars, because if you're going, you have to wait an hour to charge, you're going to go to a restaurant and just buy something. So,
well, okay.
So this is a total of two. It's it's numbered one and two.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So it's two stations, but four chargers.
Four ports. Yeah.
Got it.
Total.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
So there's two chargers for each machine, is what you're saying? So.
Mm-hmm. So dual port. Yeah.
Actually giving
four charges. Yeah.
Four parking spots.
Yes.
For this?
Yes.
Do we have to declare them both to be EV spots, or can we just say one is an EV spot and if the other one's open, you can use it?
We can just do one. We can do whatever board of reference is.
Yes. And the app will signal a driver, like, hey, your time is almost up, you need to move your car. You know, so the next driver can come out.
I think once we determine exactly where the utilities are, it will be, that's what's going to help a lot with this.
Thank you. Trustee Coonsy?
Yes.
Trustee Britton?
Yes.
Trustee Saviano?
Yes.
And Trustee Sauer?
Yes.
Okay, that takes us to item D, which is a presentation and proposal regarding four-way Barrington X. Joe, the floor is yours.
Just give a brief intro before Joe and John get started. So, as you all know, we have a public works facility and a water pumping station cistern at 408 Barrington Avenue. It's been in a state of disrepair for many years. Once we proposed our budget for this fiscal year, we talked about the need to move that facility. It's not operational. There's no plans for it to be operational, and right now it's just sort of an eyesore. And what we're looking at doing is we've already disconnected much of the infrastructure. Phil and Franco have been doing a great job trying to dismantle everything without knowing exactly what's there. And so we're at the point now where we need to demo the building, demo the structure. But because the holding tank is so large, if it were removed, you would have to truck in fill to fill it up. But if we're going to put something there eventually, somebody might come in and have to haul all that away. So it's kind of like a double charge for no reason. So it would be really helpful if we had some concept or plan or idea of what potentially could be built there so that we could then demo based on that, or it's better if we had a plan that was able to be executed in the short term so that we could just go right from demo into construction. So Joe and John have come up with a plan, and they would like to share it with you, and then we would like to get feedback on what your thoughts are, and if you think it's something that you'd like to get more information about and potentially move forward with. So I know you have a short presentation, so.
Absolutely. We're here today to talk to you about, as described, the well land over there on Barrington. We've been looking at it for about 3-4 years. And now the village is starting to move along on it. We've been able to complete about 80 apartments in the community so far. And apartments are doing well. This year we want to try something a little bit differently because we're getting more into a neighborhood. The ones out there were more standalone. This is more into a neighborhood. We did do some research, though, for you to show you that by the time we're done with this project, we'll have over 100 apartments, and we have some information to show kind of what we're bringing into the community as far as disposable income for all the residents of these. Also, 811, 855, those pieces are now generating $250,000 of real estate taxes. So that has been sitting there empty forever. So. We've been successful in doing that, making our different projects. We did bring in some other projects, because 855, that's not all what we do, but depending on the land and the market. we have to be able to make apartments at least somewhat affordable so people have a place to live. So the fancier we get, more expensive. So this is something we just finished in Woodstock with a lot of help from the community, TIF money, and a lot of other incentives. Is what's under construction right now over in Huntley. This is the old Huntley Fire Station, and DC Cops will be joining us there. There I am. There we'll be. So this is a project we're doing now. And then we'd like to be able to start to move into this project here. And something else that we're going to try here with advice from our management company that takes care of all this. We're going to go with, we're trying to get closer, since you guys were talking about the environmental, we're going to go all electric in this building. This will be our first time doing this, to try to become more green. We're also looking at ways of creating solar in other areas so we can feed the building solar. That's still something that we're learning about. We are actually starting our first solar project to be able to potentially feed our buildings or others' buildings.
I'll just start with the buildings itself, but we're looking at setting, I'll go with the site plan first. This is Barrington Avenue right here. This is the west side. So with the topography, we have about a 24-foot drop between the west side, from the east side going to the west. And with that drop, we would end up putting a retaining wall in roughly right under the property line on the east. Retaining wall at this point, this portion of ground creating a flat for the parking and the building structure to be built. The retaining wall stepping down grade by about 6 feet. We'd have stairs and also put landscaping in here, kind of make it like a little park area for the tenants that they could sit in there or enjoy with the different tiers in there, different landscaping. Another retaining wall bringing it down another 6 feet. Then we have the parking and the building again, the second building on the west, and then a fourth retaining wall in here. So there would be quite a bit of earthwork as well as a retaining to make this property work with this property that it presents itself to us. What we're proposing to do is to go ahead and this would be the elevation which faces up, we'll call it the landscape courtyard area. Their balconies and patios would be facing that so that they can enjoy it. And then we the mixed use products that we're going to be introducing on this. This is a stone that we would have going from 1 to 2 stories up. Where this is all LP product, which is the smart side product. It's a 50-year type product, and for the horizontal, the vertical, and the shake, we have the vertical over here, horizontal, and the shake, in the different colors, whatever it is. It's all LP product. They make it all, and we would be using that for the siding on the building itself. Introducing a few more gables with a little architectural detail on the top with a wood lattice type look on that. The back side of this is the parking lot side of the buildings. And with the double gable on that to bring up the dress it up a little bit, as well as we have entryways on this side of the building too. So there'll be entries off of both sides, one to exit the courtyard area and one into the parking ingress and egress. One of the things that we are, the floor plans, they're all 1 and 2 bedroom. Each building consists of 12 units, equal distribution as far as 6 and 6, 1 and 2 bedroom units. The price for the apartments that we're anticipating is one bedroom would be at $1,400, and we're a little over $1,600 on a two bedroom. One of the things that Joe did mention, and I'd like to bring back up, is the fact that between the 36 apartments, first of all, not only the real estate taxes, of which the apartments currently that we hold in East Dundee generated an additional $250,000 of real estate taxes. Obviously, you can see what your percentage is on that. And then another thing is disposable income generated. With 36 units, the average King County income is $84,000 a year. We subtract out the payroll taxes, your taxes, both Fed and state, for $84,000 is 22.5. The net result is 10% of the $84,000 after tax is $61.32, which is disposable. So each one of the buildings over 811 East Main, 855 East Main, are generating $227,752 in disposable income to be spent within your community. 201 Penny Ave is 8 units, generating $49,000. 408 Barrington Proposed would be 24 units, generating $147,000. All in all, our company would be bringing additional $637,728 of disposable income to be spent within East Dundee. I think that's a very important factor to not only split the real estate taxes, but also your businesses rely upon you to hopefully thrive and create more bodies walking the downtown area or just in town. I mean, even the larger, more the Walmarts and everybody else, you know, they rely upon the body. So the local businesses really rely upon that, and I think that they would be interested to, you know, see that they are being taken care of as well. One of our, within our tip request, what we are requesting is that we would have the land deeded to us. It would be $10, another valuable consideration, typical transfer. The backside increment, there's two ways to approach the backside increment. The backside increment, we are anticipating a generation of about $70,000 in taxes. There's no real estate tax on that here, so it would be a total generation of increment. We are looking at a 75 for the, right now at this point in time, we believe that there's only 7 years remaining in the TIF, unless the TIF was expanded and or lengthened. I'm using the worst case scenario of the 7 years, and so our participation is the 52 number. East Dundee's participation would be 17.5. So that I've structured the TIF on the backside for that. One of the things, the fourth item is that all permit fees are, as we have done before, but the permit fees are being waived as well. The TIF, we're also making this work. Our material cost has gone up. It's just out of sight. So what we used to build 36 units for, I think you can only build like about 18 to 20 units for the same number from just 3 years ago. And obviously rents are up, but rents are not up proportionally to cover all these expenses. Interest rates also are another factor, which is very significant in our debt service. One of the things that we have to have in order to have finance on the project is our debt service coverage ratio, the DSCR, has to be 1.25. In this scenario here, we're generating 1.19. So without this fourth item here in the TIP request, which is a TIP loan of $225,000, when we put... what that gets us up to is that 1.19. We've spoken with our lender, our construction lender, and with that TIF loan, reducing the principal balance from our 25% down a little bit lower by the 225, they'd be in the acceptable range of the 1.2, 1.19. So the TIF loan itself is very important to our financing. Same thing with appraised value. The appraisal does not use the TIF at all as far as any valuation. If you look at it, the appraised value, the current rents that we would be generating and the NOI on the property, you would look at a sale price of about $4.65 million. And right now we're anticipating that our cost to construct the building is going to be $4.827. So appraising doesn't even work, and again, hence, now we have two factors that would require the reduction of the principal amount. That's where the TIF loan comes from. It's reducing the principal amount so that the appraised value works for us, as well as our debt coverage ratio gets up to that close to that 1.2 with the additional principal pay down. So we have four things in that. That's the the land, backside participation. How you'll receive your $225,000 back, what we're looking at is on an annual basis upon receipt of the $52,000 on our 75%, $20,000 would be paid back to the village. And over the 7-year period, easy, it's 140. And if we look at this toll of the village's participation in the 7-year period, this is based on a 2% escalation in taxes. We have $128,000 that would be repaid through the increment, and then $140,000 coming back from us in the 7-year period. So we have $267,000 to come back, which would reimburse the village for the TIF loan of the $225,000. That way the village is made whole, kind of gets us through our temporary hurdle of appraised value and our debt coverage ratios. And then if the village did extend a TIF, it would just even be better for the village, obviously, because that increment would go out for another 23-year period. So that's our proposal on 408 Barrington. What we'd like to do with it as far as buildings, a total of 24 units, 24,000 square feet, it parks itself, and the TIF requirements, and going back to this is what we're looking at as far as what it would look like as people were driving by.
I'm just going to add one thing that I don't think you mentioned is this is a village-owned property. We have many options of what we could do with it, one of which would be to turn these into single-family home lots. But if we could go that course, it would not generate the density that would be supporting those downtown businesses. And the assessed value of potentially 3 to 4 single-family homes that you could put on that lot would be, you know, potentially $1 million, whereas this would be a almost $5 million project. So there's value in having more residents in this proximity, walkable to the downtown. There's high demand for housing near the downtown, and adding that disposable income is just going to benefit the businesses and help us to sustain the business community for the long term. So there's a lot of reasons why, looking at the long term, it would make more sense to do a high density project, especially given that there's really very little vacancy at all in apartments, not just in East Dundee, but in the county as a whole. So creating more housing in the county has been a King County goal for quite some time.
So in a nutshell, what you're looking at from the village is we knock down the building, we give you the land at 75% of the TIF, for the rest of the TIF, essentially.
Remaining 7 years. I think it's 9 out of 9 by the time the building's up and running, it's about 7.
Yes. And we run the numbers in the event that the TIF were to be extended.
Oh, yeah, it's great for you.
Yeah. If the TIF gets extended.
If they change.
Which is good.
No, for us it doesn't.
No.
For us it doesn't. I mean, if the TIF is extended, it's just all your money.
Yeah.
I mean, so the additional time is just more of 100% of the increment going to you.
It's great to look at it. It's highly likely that we're extending that TIF. That's the downtown TIF. That's the one that we're working with the consultant on the study for right now. If we were to look at it as, yes, we're extending the TIF, it's happening tomorrow, they could knock down the 75% over the course of that and lower it, but it's a much bigger benefit to us if they only take it for 7 years and the village gets it for the remaining 16 or whatever it is.
I understand the need for density, but that's really pushing it, guys, for me.
Was there one direction from the people we talked to in your village?
Mm-hmm.
As far as trying to get more density to the downtown?
No, I understand that. I mean, I get what we're trying to do here, only if you take a look at the surrounding homes around here, I don't know if that fits in with what we're proposing here. This is like, I don't know, certainly they have to be made aware of that.
It is zoned as what right now?
Well, actually, I don't know if it's a residential zoning, right? To be honest with you, since it's a village-owned property.
It's not, because then we have the whole conversation a year ago where there was someone staying in the property, and it wasn't zoned to be residential?
No, it wasn't.
So it's not zoned residential?
No, we actually kind of...
Yeah, that was...
It's R2. Yeah, it is.
So we have to change our property.
I am not at all against this. My concern is with the residents surrounding it, because it is all kind of one and a half story homes there. So especially with the grade, it feels like that's going to feel very tall in that neighborhood, and I'm not sure I love that.
This is 4 feet above below grade. The total building height is about 36 feet. So this is going to be like a 32-foot building. Since this building here is 466, so it is 16 feet below this gray line here.
Okay.
So the homes here and here, this will feel like less than a two-story building.
Okay.
You know, because the way it sits so low on the slanting property. Now, if you were this home right on the corner,
right, so
this rental unit, that would be full size. But to the other homes that are in this area, that isn't going to feel like a story and a half.
It's not going to stand out above the tree line in the neighborhood.
This one will have a full height, but this one, so it tapers it down. I think it eases it into it as well. And I think overall, if you take a look at what has been there for 50 years, that water treatment facility, and how long has that been abandoned, and the aesthetics of that, the people around here have lived with that for decades.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
I think that this is actually a significant improvement over what is existing on that property today.
And also, I think, I live right down the block, so I drive by this every day. Mm-hmm. I know what the homes look like, I know what the driveways, the mechanics work there. Driveways up and down there. I think this would actually increase the value of the whole area.
And then are there ways to, like, if you're a nearby neighbor, you might be worried about people wandering through your yard, would it be totally fenced, and are there ways to kind of landscape
fenced
towards this?
Yeah, our landscaping actually is going
to be a lot to do.
Very enjoyable. I mean, that's the whole concept of this, is we're trying, because there's quite a few trees on the neighboring property as well. As far as mature trees. And we can put a fence line like along in here to make sure, kind of keep it unto itself. But on the other hand, too, with the mature trees around and this landscaping in here, the whole idea is to make it a little more quaint, homey, and fit in and also supply the density that the downtown area needs to thrive.
And the amount of money is going to go ahead for the village, it's amazing.
So did I understand that before, where you said your appraised value at the end of it all is going to come in below your cost?
Yes, it is.
How are you going to make any money on that, guys?
No, we make money on it because with the first 7 years for TIF assistance. So that's why the TIF is in place, and that's why the TIF works so well in the state of Illinois, is that you'll see that with the TIF assistance and subtract, that's the $52,000, get back 20. So really we are receiving 32. That brings us to a 13.3% cash on cash, which is a return on our cash equity investment. This 13.3 is also predicated on the fact that this 225 is subtracted directly from the principal balance. We get this loan and we're able to do that. It allows us to make a 13% return. Let's go along for 7 years. So you see, as the rents go up a little bit each year and our taxes, and then what's going to happen in year 8 is we drop down to 11%. However, 11% return from our perspective is an acceptable return. So that's why two things. You extend the TIF after year 7, it's all yours. We don't need it. Because now the economy itself has brought itself up to a level to where the rents will cover our debt service. And your loan has been repaid, plus a little bit by year 7. So you can benefit from the TIF extension 100%. Our returns are in acceptable format to where it makes it profitable for us.
We don't just flip. So, to your question, your point about we don't make a ton, but over the years you make money, and then it goes to, for me, it's for family.
So if we look at minimum 10-year holds on every single project, and because the idea is that overall, in a 10-year holding period, we're, our cash on cash would be 15.5 and a 26 IRR, simple IRR. You know, and then if there's investors involved, obviously their tax situation affects a simple IRR. So they have good returns. We have good returns. This is what we call a home run. But still, a good return in today's economy is a very nice thing to have. And then also upon exit, if we did decide to exit in year 11, you know, that's when obviously the equity portion of that is returned back. But the, you got to remember too, the equity portion, when we return it back, we've already considered the principal reduction in the IRR, which, so therefore it's not really a cash item coming in, the equity reduction, or principal reduction.
So I'm looking at, what is that, 1.4, is that 1.491 up front?
Yeah, we're coming up with?
Yeah.
No, that's our equity.
Right.
This is the feet. Yeah. We have the tip request is here. And then this is an internal document that created over 30 years. So it calculates practically everything you ever want to know about a piece of property. We take a look here. We even have a section here for my debt service coverage, and which allows us to say, okay, if the loan to hit my debt coverage at 1.25, we either have to write a check, which we're willing to take the responsibility to do such, of $212,000 for additional principal reduction, or our rental rates have to go up $41 and $55, you know, for per one and two bedroom, or it's a combination thereof. Do we raise rents $25? But we're always running these calculations every 6 months, every performance updated within for all the properties, so we know where we stand and what our coverage rates are and where we're at. It's a commercial loan, which a apartment building is. It's different than a residential. If it doesn't appraise, you either pay the difference between the appraised value and your current outstanding principal to get it within acceptable loan-to-value ratios. If the cash flows aren't there, you don't get your debt coverage, we're paying down. So that's why we monitor this property so closely, is because a bank, commercial bank, could call almost at any time for out of line property performance.
Any other questions?
Yeah, after 10 years, is it dump it or is it to refinance?
I don't know how to say that because I don't plan to dump the building.
No, but I mean, but we look at a minimum of 10. And then after that,
we got to show them something.
Right. So, and after that, you just take a look at it. The idea is that you have two old geezers and a long-term income is important. You know, whether it's 10 years or 20 years, that's what it generates.
Any comments on the building itself?
I think it's great. I like that it's green. I like the idea, and that it brings for people that are walking distance because we have a parking issue. So I think that is really helpful as well. I like the idea of trying to do some solar on it. I think it's
keep in mind too, the landscaping you're seeing is not for
literally my only sticking point is how tall will it look.
Yeah,
that's my only.
So if there's the general agreement that we should continue the discussion about this, potentially I could work with them to get some kind of drawing of what it looked like from the street with the landscaping so that you get a sense of how it would fit in with the adjacent properties.
That would be helpful for me.
Yeah.
Right. You give it a street perspective with the elevation heights on it. And we actually shoot the elevations of the existing homes around it and everything to it.
Yeah. I just can't picture it. You know, I can't.
Well,
I can't make it
from,
happen in my head.
Like
this is
from my perspective, all buildings aren't that tall to me.
You know, if this is the first effort you guys have had with this all electric concept, I'm worried that, or is there going to be any sort of contingency fund put aside to convert to a fossil fuel approach in the event it doesn't work?
It doesn't work.
It's just going to be electric building.
It's an electric building, which means
that's just about a 15th century technology, Joe. That's my only fear.
We're talking about a stove that's electric and a furnace that's electric. They're already out there. They've been out there for
the dryer.
So these are technologies that have been around for 50 years.
Yeah.
So I can work that.
Southern Illinois does that. That's
really, my biggest, I had a hard time with it because I don't want to cook on electric.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I've been thinking. I've talked to so many people and they're like, no, green, especially the younger kids now.
Yeah.
So I don't get that.
In many cases, it ends up saving the tenant money because they're not paying the delivery charge on the gas.
Mm-hmm.
So they may consume more electric, but overall, the price is, day-to-day expenses are reduced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the cost to do one or the other isn't that big of a difference. It costs a little bit more, but I think with the who we're attracting, the younger people, they like the fact that we're trying to do these things.
Mm-hmm.
And that little corridor in the middle,
mm-hmm.
I'm excited about it. It'll be great.
Well, I think you're gonna have to sell it to the residents to change the zoning
up front. Right. Yeah, we'll have to go through the whole process. I mean, tonight what we're looking for is approval to go ahead and take the next step, which would be the street elevations, start negotiations in regards to the TIF and kind of fine tune that a little bit more. And yeah, obviously at a certain point, Joe reviews everything and then we come between a 4B and C to obviously go through the zoning aspects and the variances that are going to be required as well. And then eventually bring it back to the board for approval.
One more for me.
Yeah, I'm just concerned about what it's going to look like from Barrington Avenue. As we're going by, we're going to look at the size of these buildings. I envisioned it being the faces on Barrington and then parking behind.
We tried that.
With that 24-foot drop?
Yeah.
Well,
financially,
is there something that we can do for what would face Barrington?
Yes.
Okay. I'd be interested in seeing that as well.
As a matter of fact, we did ask for
it. As a matter of fact, what we can also do is, what was it? The company that we use for this has the ability to do like the aerial flyby, where it's like you're going around
it. Okay.
We'll just start off with a view from the street.
Yeah, that would be great.
And the neighbors want that family. Most of the houses around us are 2, 3, and 4 unit buildings. So,
yeah.
All we're doing is asking to use the same thing, but pretty much.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
you
I just.
More consensus.
Yeah,
start.
I think, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you got a thumbs up? Thumbs up?
Yeah.
Thumbs up?
We're going to a housing crisis in this country.
Right. And we're trying to be as careful as we can to do something pretty without making it so expensive that it doesn't work for anybody. So, again, $70,000 to taxes, disposable income.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's your job to get those people to come downtown.
Mm-hmm.
But we're getting in your town. Nobody else is doing that around here. So, okay, we really appreciate what you did. It's been successful and it's been helpful. So,
yep.
You're a step.
All right. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Do you want to see my wages?
Okay, that takes to item E. We have a motion on this please.
I'll make a motion to approve an ordinance authorizing the acquisition of a leasable interest in certain real property located at 7 Maiden Lane, or eminent domain or otherwise located in tax increment redevelopment project area of the downtown tax increment financing district.
Okay.
Second.
So this item, as described in the packet, is for the Hayter property over on Maiden Lane on south side of 72. The property is in a pretty significant state of disrepair, as numerous code violations. I've been working with the property owner for quite some time trying to address those. But we've also been actively working with the property owner to acquire the property. We put in an offer and we have been negotiating. This ordinance will authorize me to continue those discussions and hopefully come to a final price that both sides agree is fair. What we're really doing is trying to make sure that the community has something there that isn't what's currently there. And in order to facilitate that and speed it up, it's most wise for the village to purchase it, because there's no other buyers on the market for years, and it's going to take a significant amount of resources to redevelop it, which likely require TIF assistance. So there's not likely to be any buyer on the street who would buy this property and be able to put in the necessary financing to make it viable. So it's going to require village's assistance. Again, this is why it's in a TIF district. The TIF exists for this reason, so that properties like this don't sit around forever. So we'd like to move forward with continuing those negotiations, and eminent domain would be used as a last resort if we're not able to come to an agreement on price at some point in time through the course of 3 months.
Okay. Trustee Coonsey?
Yes.
Trustee Britton?
Yes.
Trustee Saviano?
Yes.
And Trustee Sauer?
Yes. That takes us to item F.
Move to approve an ordinance authorizing the acquisition of fee simple interest in certain real property located at 110 and 112 East Railroad Street, where eminent domain or otherwise located in the tax increment redevelopment project area of downtown tax increment financing district.
Second.
Similarly, this is a property that I've been actively negotiating with the owner on since January. I really want the community to get a fair price for this. I don't want us to have to overpay. But we did offer 30% above the asking price, which we thought was fair. But we still aren't at an agreement yet, so this...
No, 30%
over the appraisal price.
Appraisal price. Sorry.
It should be, yes.
So I'm optimistic that I'm going to be able to get a fair price for both the community and the seller. But again, if it doesn't come to be fruition that we need assistance, we would proceed with the amendment, but only as a last resort. So, any questions?
Trustee Coonsey?
Yes.
Trustee Britton?
Yes.
Trustee Saviano?
Yes.
And Trustee Sauer?
Yes.
Okay, that takes us to item G.
I'll make a motion to approve a resolution awarding a contract to Scorto Cement Construction, LTD, in the amount of $36,326 for the Bonnie Dundee Road Culvert Replacement Project.
Second. Okay. Do you have any rundown on this at all, or is it all coming pretty up?
Sure.
Self-explanatory.
Sure. We looked at this project talked to a number of contractors to essentially perform all aspects of the project. Conversations were in excess of $75,000, which was quite a bit above what we had budgeted for the project and anticipated. So decided to kind of bring in the project management of this in-house. And so we solicited proposals for the excavation, culvert pipe installation, and also the installation of the headwall on the upstream side. So we did solicit the excavation portion falls within the village administrator's purchasing authority. So we're at this point this evening looking to seek approval of the construction of the headwall on the upstream side. We did receive 3 proposals. It's a little higher than what we had anticipated, but just the economy right now, things are more expensive, of course. And we have 3 proposals. We are going with the highest of the 3 only because of their availability. The other 2, we more or less had to make a decision, and we said, okay, who can perform this work at the soonest schedule-wise, because we want to get this project completed ahead of the Bonnie Dundee resurfacing project, which should occur sometime, I think, in mid-October.
So when we go resurfacing, is the fact that Bonnie Dundee is not a curved street lessen the life of the culvert? I mean, so in other words, we've got this out there now, and we get 20 years out of it. Would we get 30 if it were a curved road?
No, the culvert is dependent on the material of the pipe. And there's a current CMP, or a corrugated metal pipe, which is rusted out. So it's just a material.
So material on top of it is going to have any effect on whether or not the drainage area going into the pipe is going to remain the same. So, I'm just wondering if we were to entertain the idea of curving it 10 feet each direction from the pipe, if we would get more life out of that project in that area.
Metal rust in the water.
Well, and the galvanized is there, and it lasts for 20, 25 years, but is there another material that can be used? There's a lot of it done in PVC.
The PVC pipe is what we're going to use.
Yes. Okay.
We're not going to build a corrugated metal pipe for this project.
Correct.
All
right.
Well, I guess one of my questions is, there's a bit of Julian.
No, that the cost of that phase of this project falls within the Village Administrator Purchasing Authority, so I'm actually go over you all at this point on that one. And they're going to be handling the excavation as well as the pipe installation, and we in Public Works will assist when possible, transporting spoils out and stone in, so we're kind of a joint effort, if you will, to try to save some overall project.
Yes. Trustee Coonsy?
Yes.
Trustee Britton?
Yes.
Trustee Saviano?
Yes.
And Trustee Sauter?
Yes.
All right. That takes us to item H. We can have a motion.
Only question to approve a resolution awarding bid to Schroeder Asphalt Services, Inc. in the amount of $204,833.69 for the 4th Street Improvement and Pavement Patching Project.
Second.
So this wasn't a not to exceed number, was it? So 4th Street.
It's hurt next.
Oh, right. Yeah, got it.
Oh man,
this is I'm good. So that would be from what, Farrington to Railroad?
Railroad, yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And did we get a buy-in on the other property owners to the east edge that they were going to amend, if you will, or pretty up their aprons? Because there's two buildings there that to the south that are pretty beat up.
The concrete business,
yes.
In particular, there have been some conversations. I don't know where it's landed with. We're going to install curb along essentially our right of way, and I don't know that I've received a formal commitment from them as to what they're going to do from the curb to their building. I don't know if they're going to do that.
Sharon's shown no interest in doing that. I wouldn't have thought so.
We're going to encourage them to.
Let's do that.
We're going to continue working on it. It's kind of your business, so I would
hope. Well, that's the point. But, you know, we're going to spend all this money on creating that 4th Street. We, you know, go a long way if the residents or the owners of the property on that would, you know, help us out with the same.
So, for clarity, this is set to be part, this is set to be paid for out of capital projects. It's over what we expected and budgeted, but we have the funds available. So we're all good.
Yes.
Thank you.
And were we able to, we met with some of those businesses and there was drainage issues they were concerned about, like Zella Marketing, the one in the corner. If we identify what was causing the flooding and make sure the equipment we're putting in maybe helps that or doesn't make it worse.
Right.
the existing downspouts into a separate storm sewer that can carry on with the buildings. There's not much we can do for underground water. You talked about underground water. Yeah. The drainage makes it without doing curtain drains, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Trustee Coonsie.
Yes.
Trustee Britton.
Yes.
Trustee Saviano.
Yes.
Trustee Sauter.
Yes.
Takes us to our last item. Item I, if I could have a motion.
I will make a motion to approve a letter of credit from Powell Land 250 Patricia in the amount of $35,608.08 from Wintrust Bank to replace an existing letter of credit from Republic.
So I said, well, there are two. Is this just housekeeping?
You got the second? Okay.
Yes. So this will be an exact duplicate copy of the existing letter of credit because they are changing their use.
All right. Is there any other questions or discussion?
Yep. Trustee Coonsie?
Yes.
Trustee Britton?
Yes.
Trustee Saviano?
Yes.
And Trustee Sauter?
Yes.
Okay, that takes us to our financial reports, the ones listed in the packet. And questions, of course, can go to Erica or Brandis. That'll take us to our reports. And I'm going to start out with a proclamation for Constitution Week. I'd like to read this into the record. For Constitution Week, September 17th through 23rd, whereas September 17th, 2022 marks the 235th anniversary of drafting of the Constitution of the United States of America by the Constitutional Convention, and whereas it is fitting and proper to accord official recognition to this magnificent document and its memorable anniversary, and to the patriotic celebrations which will commemorate the occasion, and whereas Public Law 915 guarantees the issuing of a proclamation each year by the President of the United States of America, designating September 17th through the 23rd as Constitution Week, now therefore I, Jeffrey Lyon, by virtue of the authority vested in me as the President of the Village of East Dundee, do hereby proclaim the week of September 17th through the 23rd as Constitution Week, and ask our citizens to reaffirm the ideals of the framers of the Constitution had in 1787 by vigilantly protecting the freedoms guaranteed to us through this guardian of our liberties, remembering that lost rights may never be regained. So, I would encourage everyone, especially since we're headed to an election year, get yourself a copy of this document and read it. It's enlightening. So, I appreciate that. And so then we have
the second proclamation.
Ah.
You missed that.
It's out. Underneath.
I'm so sorry. We have a second proclamation.
Thank you, Sarah.
A proclamation establishing that it's our Fox Valley River, our Fox River Day, a watershed-wide celebration. I'll read this one, so bear with me. Whereas the Fox River was central to the lives of Native Americans inhabiting the Fox River Valley in Wisconsin and Illinois for millennia, providing an abundance of food and water to wildlife and those native populations. And whereas the Fox River was central to the lives of the early settlers in the Fox River Valley, providing a source of water and power to mill the grains to feed those settlers, saw the lumber to shelter those settlers, and drive the early machinery which formed the commercial and industrial base that gave first growth to our community. And whereas the Fox River, once a fine fishery and source of public water, became burdened with uncontrollable discharge of industrial, commercial, and municipal wastes, with the resulting pollution threatening the health and welfare of the polluted populations of the Fox River, including human and wildlife. And whereas sustained and increasingly diligent and effective efforts have been made over the past century to reduce and eliminate pollution and charges into our rivers' natural shorelines, and whereas the Fox River, has been largely freed from its burden of pollution and once again become a safe source of recreation and reliable public water supply,
with its fish and wildlife population in clear recovery, and whereas the Village of East Dundee recognizes the historic, present, and future value of this unique and precious natural resource to our community and all other communities within the and beyond the Fox River Valley, I, Jeffrey Lyon, President of the Village of East Dundee in the state of Illinois, declare the third Saturday of September of this year and every year thereafter shall be recognized as It's Our Fox River Day. And to have the support events, public and private, that honor and celebrate the life and well-being of the Fox River for us to share now and with generations to come. So, here we have it, and we have a number of friends of Fox, if you will. I took part in a township recognition event on Friday. One of the groups was the Friends of the Fox, and the other was the Schweitzer Economic Center, or Environmental Center, I should say, and both doing enormously good work. It really was wonderful to be part of that. So with that, we will go around the room and start with the reports. Andy, starts out.
Piggyback off of that, I attended the It's Your Fox River Day cleanup. Trustee Quincy did a great job of organizing and handing out bags, gloves, and leading and coaching a dozen volunteers. Most went down the river, and we had enough that we sent a crew down the bike path. There's maybe a dozen full trash bags at the end, the end point, and a few dropped along the way, but it was a very good event that a lot of people saw us on the trail thanking us as we were picking things up, so it was a great event.
Hopefully it'll catch on. Trish?
My name is Scott. Thank you, Phil, for giving us those bags and garbage bags. That was very kind of you to get that. Also, we should thank Dairy Queen.
Yes.
All the volunteers for ice cream there.
It was most excellent. Yeah. Thank you.
I didn't say that, I forgot.
Yeah. We had, I think, 15 people show up.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, with all the rain we got last weekend, the river was too high to get down on the shore level that we did last year. Blocked off some of the, especially the stuff on the south side of 72 that we haven't done before. We did the north side of 72 last year, and when I did the same walk 2 weekends ago just to see, I was pretty surprised by how much of that trash was still not there. It didn't all come back right away. But one thing I did want to talk about, we had a liquor commission meeting on last Wednesday, and Riverlease was charged with four things, and we're found liable for two. But their attorney brought up a good point that we can only do so much through Riverlease to attack this issue we have in that parking lot. And I'd really like to maybe find out what we can do to encourage the owner of that lot to put up lighting in that lot. And we spent a lot of time picking up trash in that lot over the weekend. Maybe we can ask him to put a garbage can out there, because a lot of people won't put them in the garbage cans, but some people will.
Actually, communications is already started.
Great. Sarah, what you got?
So, I was also cleaning up a river. Cam was, much to Scott's chagrin, wading into some of the shallows. One of the things we did encounter was a lot of bio waste. I think that we did a good clear out of the shorelines, but there were a lot of like tree branches and things like that. So just kind of want to maybe Phil and I can talk about what that looked like. It was challenging in some spots to navigate. So that, and this weekend is Oktoberfest, right? That's this weekend? Yeah, this is this weekend. Friday and Saturday night, I think a good chunk of us are there hanging out at least for a couple hours. Ready to come visit and say hi.
Thanks for chat.
No report.
Chief.
Just a couple quick things. One is I just want to publicly acknowledge and thank my staff for the tremendous job that they did under some very tragic and challenging circumstances handling the scene at that traffic crash that occurred on September 10th. And the other is that on a positive note, we'll be traveling to Celia at COD for the graduation of Officer Fleury, who will be graduating from his 16-week police academy and start his 12-week field training officer program.
Excellent. And when does Sergeant Vitter begin the SAD command training?
Should be in about 3 weeks. And he'll be going to one that's 2 weeks a month for 5 months. That'll be in Rockford.
Just
congratulations.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Phil, what you got?
No report this evening.
Joe.
No report.
Franco. And that brings us to our nothing.
Wow.
Okay. Well, that takes us, well, because we're done with staff reports, and we are going to adjourn into the executive session. So, if I can have a motion.
5 and 6.
5 and 6. So, the acquisition and 6.
I will move to adjourn to a closed session, close to public, and media under the provisions of the Illinois Open Meetings Act, 5 ILCS 120/2, 5 acquisition of property, and 6 sale of property, and we will adjourn out of executive session without returning to public session.
Second.
Yep.
Trustee Coonsey?
Yes.
Trustee Britton?
Yes.
Trustee Saviano?
Yes.
Trustee Sauter?
Yes.
And President Lynam?
Yes. Thank you all for coming.